This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Oh, 3 minutes after 12 is the time, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour... Well, I think that Ricky puts it best. He goes, so I audibly just said, oh, thank God, when you said it was Mystery Hour next. There's only so much I can hear about Boris Johnson and his pals before I internally combust with fury. And there it is, your weekly opportunity to step away from the fray, to steer clear of the political infighting and the unfolding scandals, and focus instead upon a curious mixture of the silly and the serious, an opportunity to enjoy a radio feature that reaches the parts other radio features can only dream of reaching. And, of course, crucially, it also delivers two guarantees. I might reinstitute the guarantees for 2022. You will know more by 1 o'clock today than you do now. And if you don't laugh at least once, you can get a full refund. Do, do, do. I love that. And great news, we're bringing back the board game. So, because I'm so grown up now, this programme. You know, some of the stuff we used to do, you know, back when no one was listening. I marvel as I reach the milestone of my 50th birthday today. Thank you so much for all the kind messages. I marvel... Oh, Keith, thank you. Still expect a present. I marvel at the silliness. We used to play a game, which you call Beat the Sweet. It must be going back 16, 17 years. Beat the Sweet, on the same programme, the same slot on the same radio station, involved me eating an item of confectionery and you ringing in to ask questions which I could only answer yes or no in the hope of working out what item of confectionery it actually was. And there was no prize. It just used to go nuts. All sorts of things we used to do on the programme. Good Golly Miss Lolly was an evolution of Beat the Sweet, involving lollies rather than sweets. I don't know why I'm mentioning that. It's obviously, you know, it's a bit of a milestone today. And I think perhaps it's time for a new era on this programme of maturity and good sense, of seriousness and gravitas. No, don't worry, you're all right. Anyway, the point is, there's so many people listening to the programme now that we have to be very grown up about things, which means we have to have actual legal advice about the... offer to give away a copy of the Mystery Hour board game, the best-selling Mystery Hour board game, to the best contribution of the week to Mystery Hour. And that is now back up and running. The terms and conditions have been rejigged for 2022. And it means that I once again find myself in the position of being able to send a brand spanking new shiny box full of knowledge and bluff-based joy to one lucky caller. And if you want to find out more about the board game, it's mysteryhour.co.uk to get hold of it. And it will be in shops. I'll give you a heads up. It will be in shops soon. But for now, the best place to get it is mysteryhour.co.uk, although other online retailers also stock it. 6 minutes after 12 is the time. Should we just crack on? I don't think I need to explain the rules now, do I? Anymore? Given the... Well, look, people, you've got a question, you ring in and you ask it, and someone else rings in and answers it. But it's a hell of a lot more fun than that sounds. The only rule, really, is that you're not allowed to look anything up. And no, we can't play Beat the Sweet tomorrow. Thank you to everybody who's just texted in to ask that question. That's it. So you can't look stuff up. You've got to know the answer for reasons that I will ask you to explain. But it doesn't have to be... deep or clever. You could just have seen it on telly. In fact, last week we had the first instance of somebody knowing the answer to a question because they had read it on the card that came with the Mystery Hour board game. In other words, I'd forgotten that we'd not only dealt with that question before and successfully answered it, but also included it in the Mystery Hour board game. So any qualifications at all, as long as they are honest, will do. 12:07 is the time. James is in Southampton. James, question or answer?
It is a question, James. Happy birthday as well, by the way.
Thank you very much indeed.
And well done to Kidderminster at the weekend, of course.
Just astonishing, wasn't it? Absolutely astonishing. Brilliant. We got a result last night as well, which is more important in a way, because we're unlikely to win the FA Cup. Even I concede that, and we're going to need a bit of a miracle against West Ham on the weekend of the 8th. But we shall see. Proper result. We shall see. Thank you for that. Carry on.
We already have the board game as well, so please exclude us from the competition to win the board game.
Look at that. That's very decent of you. We could have given it to someone else, taken it back to the shops and got a refund, but I will. Go on. Well, it depends how good the question is.
question is, so I've been pondering this for a while. Most sports teams, when they play for their country, sorry, my dog is just barking.
That's quite all right. So is Keith.
They play in their kit, or their outfit represents the flags, the colours on their flag.
Yeah.
It's Italy playing blue, which has absolutely nothing to do with their flag. And it's always baffled me as to why Italy playing
blue.
Sure?
Are you sure there aren't lots and lots of other countries that play in strips that have nothing to do with their flag?
The only other example I can think of is maybe the German football team who play normally in white.
Yes.
I know during the 80s they used to have some yellow and black and red across the front of their kit.
A little bit.
But England white, Scotland navy blue, yeah. France blue, Ireland green.
All right, I'll put it on the board. It rings a vague bell, that one, but possibly just because we've had football short questions before. Why do the Italian sports teams play in blue when there is... I mean, what is it about blue? It's not on their flag. What is associated with blue? Thank you, James. Thank you for the kind words. It is 9 minutes after 12. Chrissy is in Barnsley. Chrissy, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on.
If you used a thermal imaging camera overhead... in a graveyard, would you be able to see which bodies had been buried recently? Because obviously when things rot, they give off energy and heat.
Chrissy?
Yes.
What have you got planned?
Nothing. I walk my dog most mornings around the graveyard and
right.
I think of things like this.
I just finished Peter James's latest Roy Grace novel. It's possibly his best yet. And I'm thinking that if you have got something, this is the kind of thing that would help Roy Grace solve the crime. He'd say, you'll never guess what's happened. So Glenn Branson would come into the room and he'd say, you'd never guess what's happened, boss. We've only got footage of her ringing up James O'Brien's Mystery Hour asking about bodies rotting in the graveyard. And Roy Grace would be like, oh, my God, I can't believe it. Well done, Glenn. Let's get over there now.
Yeah, no, I'm not planning anything.
I'm very glad to hear it. It seems unlikely because there'd be something decomposing almost everywhere, wouldn't there? I mean, thermal imaging is you know, not just human bodies. There'd be wildlife decomposing. There'd be compost gives off heat. So I presume that there's a signature that denotes a living body. You're not going to get confused. But someone who's used it can tell us.
Obviously, bodies are a lot bigger than like a little bird.
That's very true. That's very true.
No,
does a decomposing body give off enough heat to pop up on a thermal imaging camera? Is that the question?
Yes.
Right,
much
you're
better
right. Oh, right. Yes, that's what I'm here for. 11 minutes after 12. And if you do turn out to be planning something nefarious, I just want to disassociate myself from it completely at this point. 11 minutes after 12 is the time. And if you do win the board, Chrissy, come back. If you win the board game, right? Because your question is a very good one. If you win the board game and then it turns out that you were planning a heinous crime, I'm going to take the board game back, OK?
OK, that's fine.
So I just want to be absolutely clear on that. That is on the record now. 11 minutes after 12 is the time. Greg is in Leicester. Greg, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
If she doesn't win the board game, can I get it in second place?
We're not there yet, mate. Let's not jump the gun. I haven't even heard your question. But if she wins the board game and then is found to have committed several murders, you can possibly put in first dibs on getting the board game.
Yeah,
she'll be forced to send back to the studio, maybe.
Yeah.
Carry on.
That sounds good. It's the armrest etiquette on planes.
And
there's
cinemas.
Only sort of one in between the seats or two if it's a four-seater. And it's all that sort of dance that you do who gets it and who doesn't get it. And, you know, you sort of...
Have you had any bad experiences?
Well, not really, no, because I'm a bit of a sort of give in, really.
Do you?
And then,
do you
and
roll
then when
over?
Somebody goes to the toilet, that's when I'd
make
it.
A move.
Yeah.
What about? I mean, I don't know if there's going to be a definitive answer to this, but what about the double slot? So, you know, someone puts their arm there and you slot your arm just behind theirs, maybe even touching a bit. Would you be all right with that?
Not really. I don't think I've ever travelled that sort of class, really, where you get a double arm.
No, I don't mean that. I mean two actual arms, like human arms, on the same armrest,
British, we don't do...
Well, that's what I thought you were going to say, because that should be the obvious way of doing it, is you should realise, same on tubes, same everywhere else. Cinemas, I think we've done, bizarrely, and you can work it out from where you are in the row.
Yeah, no, in cinemas you definitely get
I had an experience, Greg, on a plane to Bangkok. Don't worry, it's not going to be as exciting as you think. I had an experience on a plane to Bangkok because it was so long haul. And because the bloke next to me, I don't know why, but I thought, can I say this on the radio, Keith? I thought he... Greg, come here.
Yeah, I'm listening. Yeah,
I thought he was a sex tourist.
Oh, right. Okay.
I don't know why. It may have been grossly unfair.
Yeah.
But I thought he was a sleaze bag. And he was travelling alone. And
Was there any significant characteristics to indicate this?
I didn't know. I think I would get into a lot of trouble if I started offering up characteristics that I think denote sex tourist status.
Yeah.
But I was in the unfortunate position of being in a family of four and the seats in groups of three. So obviously I volunteered to go and sit across the aisle from the rest of my family. And this bloke was almost jabbing me with his elbows. And he was older than me. I thought...
Over 50?
Well, it's a while ago now. All right, thank you very much. So I actually did something, and I don't know whether I'm ashamed of it now, but I did spend about 20 minutes elbow jousting with him before winning. And then, obviously, sitting, as you say, unless I went to the toilet or fell asleep, sitting rigidly defending my armrest from the possible sex tourist on the plane to Bangkok.
It is an area that can lead to aeroplane range. Needs to be ruled.
I'd be amazed if there is an answer. Perhaps an air hostess could tell us. Do you think they're ever asked to, or host, are ever asked to adjudicate? Excuse me. I'm having a terrible time with this chap next to me. It's on the list.
Want a definitive answer so I can...
I know you do. So you can cite it. Are there any rules? Is there an established etiquette to the shared armrest on an aeroplane? That, Greg, as things stand, I think puts you in pole position for the ball game. But it is only 12:15.
Good afternoon. This is your captain speaking. We'll be landing in Heathrow in around 15 minutes, where you can get a double whopper, bacon double cheese XL, or bacon and cheese crispy chicken for just £3.
The Burger King Happy Hour. You'll want to tell everyone. Available weekdays 2 till 5 p.m. only on the Burger King app. Subject to availability at participating restaurants. T's and C's apply.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
18 minutes after 12 is the time. I can't believe I've missed this, but the going back to the conversation we had in the last hour and the continuing furore surrounding Boris Johnson's contempt for the rules that he imposed upon the rest of the country. Common sense is what he said you should use, wasn't it? So the idea that you can attend a party without realising it's a party while also deploying your common sense to do the right thing is quite the flex that he's asking you to make in his defence or indeed on his behalf. But we concern ourselves not with such matters between 12 and 1 on Thursdays. The number that you need to join in remains the same. But the subject matter is rather different. Ben is in Newcastle. Ben, what would you like to say?
Hello there.
I mean, question or answer. Question or answer is the correct introduction.
This one is question.
Question. Carry on.
We've been watching Around the World in 80 Days with the children on TV, and I wondered what the modern day around the world would be without using an aeroplane and only using scheduled travel.
Who's going to know that?
Well, somebody might have planned it.
So you want to go from all the way around the world using only non-aeroplane scheduled travel?
Yeah.
So trains and boats, cars
trains,
and
trains,
boats
car,
and coaches,
bikes, motorbikes.
You can't have a scheduled motorbike ride, can you?
I've not been everywhere in the world, I'm sure.
It's your question. I'm just trying to pin down the parameters of it. Scheduled bicycle ride. So every day at 10 o'clock, this bicycle leaves Ulaanbaatar for I don't know, Timbuktu or something like that. It just sounds unlikely. You're right. You never know. Sounds unlikely.
Maybe horses. A hole in the market
absolutely. There could be. All right, yeah. Is it good, the one on the telly? I haven't seen it. It's David Tennant.
The kids are loving it. They're well into it. So, joining. We just thought we're talking about it and just
And how quickly could you do it now?
Can you use normal planes, like non-private? Can you charter plane? You know, like a
schedule? I don't think if you chartered it, because you could just say you'd charter a jet then, wouldn't you?
No, but can you catch a permanent flight, a scheduled flight? Can you catch a flight?
No.
So no air travel at all? No air travel at all?
Yeah, I think that's a bit cheap.
Cool.
Okay.
I shall find out for you. Is it Graham, the lad who's visited every country in the world, who rings in sometimes? He might know the answer to that. But how long would it take you to get around the world? No hot air balloons either, which would put Phineas Fogg out of the picture. But with only non-air travel, non-air scheduled travel. That's a great question. But if we get an answer to that, I'll give you the money myself. Stu's in Plymouth. Stu, question or answer?
I've got an answer for you, James. Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you, mate. Carry on.
Right, the answer is to the question from the lady about thermal imaging picking up a freshly dug grave or a body decomposing in a grave.
Yes.
Thermal imaging cameras don't actually detect heat. What they're detecting is infrared energy, different parts of the infrared spectrum within the electromagnetic spectrum. So it's detecting infrared energy being emitted.
So you wouldn't be able to do it through a wall, never mind underground.
No, that's right. Now, you would be able to detect a freshly dug grave because obviously it's disturbed earth.
Yes.
And you've got if the grass has started to grow back, it's going to be a different age to the grass that's established. So the emissivity, which is a technical word I understand, is what the radiation, infrared radiation that's being emitted from that surface is going to be slightly different. And the sensitivity of the cameras, be that on a helicopter or another platform, we'll be able to detect that difference in infrared energy that's being emitted from that subject. Now, obviously, there are other things like the air temperature, and it'll all bring it to like an equilibrium. So, essentially, the older it is, obviously, the less chance you are to be able to detect a freshly dug grave. But a freshly dug grave that's recently filled in, and after about a week or so, it'll blend in. But you would be
I understand. So you're not going to be able to pick up on decomposition?
Not really, no, not there, unless it's very, very close to surface. But where we do use infrared cameras, either at the near end of the spectrum or the far end, it does detect disturbed earth, and it's very useful for that. But it's heat decomposing underneath the surface.
No, that's perfect. Qualifications? Serial killer.
I'm a satellite imagery analyst, former military, now working for a civilian company.
How many satellite imagery analysts are there out there in the military, for example, at any one time?
I'd say a couple of thousand.
Oh, would you? You just talked yourself out of a Ray Liotta. So, what a great answer, though. And Chrissy now is going to have to redraw her. No, she'll be all right now, actually. No, Chrissy, they will not be able to detect decomposing bodies using thermal imaging cameras. So you crack on with whatever it is you've got, you've been planning while you're out on those dog walks. Thank you, Stu. It is 12:23. And Jack is in Bromley. Jack, question or answer?
It is an answer, please, James.
Carry on.
So it's for the Italian sports colours, the Azzurri, in their blue colours, both for the rugby as well. And so my understanding is that it's the colour representing the former Italian monarchy. Then, so if I'm not mistaken, it was after World War II, after the ending of Mussolini and the creation of the modern sort of Italian Republic we know today, and the flag and the colours, that's all more of a modern development. And so the blue colour is a sort of a historical harking back to the pre-Republic days. That's
be the House of Savoy, wouldn't it?
I believe so, yeah. I think that'd be right, yeah.
I think it would be the House of Savoy. So blue would be associated with them, I imagine. But yeah, so it is linked to the pre-Republic colours, if you like. And therefore, yeah, I like it. Qualifications?
It'd be mainly I watch Six Nations every year, looking forward to that again.
Yes.
And so just a few years ago, it was a question that sort of I looked up myself, and then just, I guess, a bit of A-level history sprinkled in as well.
Why do they wear blue shirts? Why you just looked it up and took you back to the royal family, the pre-Republic royal family? It's earned you a round of applause, Jack. Well done.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, I like that. 25 minutes after 12 is the time. And Angela is in Romford. Angela, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
I was with my son last week, and we were in his podiatrist's office.
Oh, yes.
And he saw his podiatrist's Bachelor of Science certificate. And yes, he wanted to know, what does the word bachelor in Bachelor of Science mean? I've got a Bachelor's of Engineers degree, and I don't know. And the Bachelor's of Science, the podiatrist didn't know either.
Yeah. So, why Bachelor? What have you got, then? Bachelor of Science.
Yeah, I've got a Bachelor's of Engineering.
Yeah, I have too. I've got one of them as well. Not engineering.
Yeah, it was my birthday last week, so happy birthday.
Crikey, we're practically related. I've got a Bachelor. I'm a Bachelor of Science, Bachelor of Arts. I mean, maybe you had to be unmarried to study.
That's what we were thinking, but it just was a bit too weird.
Really?
Yeah, it just had a bit too weird.
Well, I don't know. I mean, quite a lot of weird stuff went on in the past. Well, quite a lot of weird stuff goes on in the present. I'm just looking at the House of Commons right now. But maybe. I don't know. I mean, we'll find out. I bet it's linked to that, though. I bet there was some requirement that if you were studying, it might be linked to the church as well. You know, because the church had a monopoly on learning for quite a long time, so you might not have been able to get married. Or it might have nothing to do with the other usage of the word bachelor, which we're both presuming it does, where it means that you don't have to get married.
We were stumped, and we both had degrees, and we were both stumped. We've never heard of the meaning, and we don't know why.
No, well, I'm stumped as well now. It's a great question. Why do people with degrees get called bachelors? It's that simple, isn't it, really? Why?
And that's my 12-year-old son's question.
I thought you said he had a degree.
No,
you and me have both got degrees and we're both stumped.
Yeah.
I thought you meant you and him. No. Both got, that's very, he's very clever at the age of 12, got a degree already. That's astonishing. Great effort. Well, you've done something right there. In fact, why hasn't he got a degree? The youth of today. The youth of today are so lazy, honestly, Angela. You've got to stop indulging him. I hope we find out. I love that. It's one of my favourite questions in a while. Thank you. Why are degree holders called bachelors? 27 minutes after 12. Noel is in Islington. Noel, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
I saw a wildlife program many years ago, and I just caught the last shots of this feature. Why did evolution result in a male seahorse giving birth to babies instead of the female seahorse?
So it's the male seahorse that gives birth
to the babies instead of the female.
Are they called sea foals, or are they just called baby seahorses?
I don't know what to call them, but it's called a seahorse.
They mate for life, don't they, seahorses?
Yeah.
They're really Well, I mean, usually the answer is that there was some sort of evolutionary benefit from it, but quite what that would be, I do not know. Are they not hermaphrodites? Are you sure they're male and female? Don't they swap sex?
No, this is a male and female. The female does the eggs, and the male gives birth to the baby.
Well, how do they get the egg out of the woman into the man?
The woman passes the egg to the male.
Right.
And somehow it gets into his stomach and he gives birth.
Somehow it gets into his stomach. This is like my sex education classes off monks.
and I always thought, why did it do that? Why did it do that?
What's that mean? So, yeah. What? Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's the only animal that does it.
I think it is, yeah? The male actually gives birth to the babies.
Yes.
Well, I mean, crikey, we just need a proper guide to this, Noel. we need diagrams, we need everything. And
getting on to your thing about the bachelor.
Yes.
No,
you're not allowed to start doing that. We've got very strict rules on this program. You can only do what you rang in to do. Like one question or one answer each. But we shall hopefully find out. If not, we might get you on next week. Thank you, Noel. How come male seahorses give birth? What's that about? What's the evolutionary explanation for that? Thank you. It's coming up to 12:30, and Amelia Cox is here now with your headlines.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 33 minutes after 12. Mystery Hour continues. Questions still in need of answers. I think we'll be lucky to get this one, but is there any etiquette or rules for the shared armrest on an aeroplane? I think flight attendants might be able to help us with that. I don't know. I hope so, because it's a brilliant question from Greg. How long would it take to get around the world using only scheduled non-air travel? That's inspired by the new series, the new production of Around the World in 80 Days on the telly box. Why do we call degree holders bachelors? And how did seahorses evolve so that the males give birth? Something for everybody there, including David Attenborough. Neil's in York. Neil, question or answer?
Question, James.
Yeah.
Okay. My question is, who are the people in our dreams? So if you're in a crowd scene, for instance, and you look over to, say, the person sat next to you on the bus, who is that person? Where do they come from? Is there like a casting, central casting bit of your brain, or do we make them up? Or where do they come from? Who are those people?
Pardon?
Well, I'll give you an example.
Go on.
So I had a dream last night, and I was in a greengrocer's,
yeah,
and I was holding two big cabbages.
Okay. Oh, you know what that means. You know what that means, don't you?
I don't, James, but I'll move on. Okay, so I was thinking, why is everybody staring at me? And then this morning I thought, who are those people in the dream? So are they people I've met and then I've stored them? And that means, like, are we in other people's dreams just waiting for our chance to get on stage in somebody else's dream?
You don't write scripts for Christopher Nolan, do you, by any chance? You know, I don't.
No, I
don't know, obviously, and I hope somebody does. But I mean, they must be remembered on some level, depending on how detailed they are. If it's like an amorphous crowd of people, if there are distinct features there, they must have been filed away in your subconscious at some point.
Just so that they can appear in our dreams at a later date, at a random. But
I'm baffled by your bafflement on this one, Neil.
Why?
Well, because it doesn't seem remarkable to me. It doesn't seem remarkable to me. I mean, you wouldn't be able to dream about a carrot or a cabbage if you'd never seen a carrot or a cabbage in real life, would you?
Ah, well, that's good. So then do we have, like, archetypal carrots?
I knew you were going to say. I thought you might say generic rather than archetypal. I knew you were going to come back with that. You're like a philosopher. You're a philosopher of dream cabbages.
I don't know about that yet. We've got to... But, I mean, I don't know if my thought is, are they, like, out of magazines? How do we, like, create them, like, out of bits?
Well, that's the question. Do we generate non-existent human faces in our dreams, or will they be recalled? But who the hell's going to know the answer to that one, man?
I'm sure your listeners, there will be somebody out there. And I think the creepy thing is that we could be appearing in people's dreams.
But you do appear in other people's dreams. Why is that creepy? The only dreams I'm interested in are the ones I've appeared in.
Yes.
That's maybe not... Should... All right, we'll find out. I like it. I mean, what happened at the end? I mean, with the cabbages and...
Well, that's it.
What?
It was inconclusive. Oh. I woke up with me thinking, I'm going to ask James today.
No, you woke up thinking, oh, I don't know, I fancy some coleslaw.
Maybe.
Sorry, 12:36 is the time. That's a cracker, isn't it? From Neil. Faces in dreams, will they all be memories in some way, or do we have a kind of random face generator built into our subconscious? And who the hell's going to know the answer to that? I'm touched by Neil's faith in you. I don't share it. In fact, speaking of holding my audience in low regard, Stuart Lee is this week's guest on Full Disclosure, which will be released tomorrow. Although he, I think, his attitude to his audience is evolving, judging by the performance I saw last Saturday night. If you get the chance, and indeed the in-depth conversation I had and enjoyed very much with him on Monday, if you haven't got a ticket yet to see Stuart Lee on his current tour, then, you're only going to have yourself to blame if you miss it. 12:37 is the time. Tom is in Walthamstow. Tom, question or answer?
It's a question for...
Carry on, Tom.
Can you be a soldier if you snore?
You mean like if you're on manoeuvre?
Like really, like I snore really badly.
Do you want to be a soldier?
Yeah, and I imagine at some point in my military career, somebody would go, should we deploy Tom from Walthamstow to Iraq or something? Yeah. And they'd go, no, he's just going to annoy everyone and give the position away.
Well, the annoying side of it, I imagine, wouldn't keep you out of the barracks. I mean, at my boarding school, the way you dealt with someone snoring on the other side of the dormitory was actually to launch an army boot, because we were all in the bloody cadets, would you believe?
Well, they've got those on hand, I suppose.
Yeah, well, that's, we'd keep our army boots under our bed. So if you were a particularly loud snorer, you would face a possible shower of very heavy army boots. And miraculously, it cures people. I mean, I know you're supposed to go and consult sleepologists and put clips on your nose and tie a tennis ball round your back or something like that. But oddly, being battered with army boots by 20 lads also cures you of snoring, we found over the years. So there would be that. But in the sense of, you wouldn't be able to... I don't know.
Is there an official point where...
What happens if you're a really, really, really loud snorer and you're sleeping in an army barracks or you're in an army camp? That's a nice question. You don't have military ambitions, do you?
No.
Probably just as well.
Peacemaker.
Peace not war, man. 12:39 is the time. What happens if soldiers snore really loudly in barracks or army camps? 03456060973. James is in Coventry. James, question or answer?
Good afternoon, James. Happy birthday.
Thank you, James.
May I ask a question, please?
You may.
I apologise. It's a bit long-winded and I'm very, very nervous. So
don't be nervous. Take all the time you want. And if you're going to be long-winded, then you're in very good company.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. I'd like to ask, were the serving Prime Minister to lose his or her constituency seat in a general election whilst the governing party retains a majority, does that person cease to be Prime Minister or unable to take their seat in the House of Commons?
Ooh, I like that. I like that. Just say the last bit of the question again.
So it's just if the Prime Minister were to lose their seat in the general election whilst the governing party retains the majority, would that person cease to become a Prime Minister or unable to take their seat in the House of Commons? Or would they not be able to vote?
I don't know. I thought I might be able to drag up an answer to that. I know that the Tory party, and there may be different rules for different parties, you can't be... I think the leader of the Conservative Party has to be drawn from elected members of Parliament, therefore House of Commons. But you don't necessarily need to be party leader to be Prime Minister. There could be... There's no example in history of this happening, I don't think.
Maybe if we wait in 3 years' time,
It's funny that you say that, because I think that Johnson's majority was the smallest ever, actually, for a serving Prime Minister. I'd actually think that in 2019 he only got about a 7,000 majority. I think that was the smallest ever for a serving Prime Minister. I bet, imagine 7,001 people sitting in Uxbridge now going, oh! I'll find out for you. I like that. So could they just shove someone out of the way and replace, can you replace someone without a by-election? You can't really, can you? You have to have a by-election. So if a PM loses his seat in a general election, can he still be PM? That's the question, right?
That's pretty much it, yeah.
Yeah, nice one. I like it a lot. I don't know what you're nervous about. It's brilliant. I like a political question. Powell is in East Sheen. Powell, question or answer? Pavel, I beg your pardon. Pavel is in East Sheen. Question or answer? I've mispronounced his name twice then in this case. Gentleman in East Sheen, question or answer? There's nothing going on there. I'm absolutely certain of it. 12:42 is the time. Let's recap on questions still needing answers. Seahorses. Why does the male give birth? Faces in dreams. Will they all involve memories? Or is there some sort of random face generator in our subconscious? Why are people with degrees called bachelors? Is there an etiquette or a rule book for the sharing of the armrest on an aeroplane? How long would it take to get around the world in 80 days using only scheduled non-air travel? And the PM loses his seat question that we've just had. And what happens if a soldier snores really, really loudly and is supposed to be going on manoeuvres, possibly quietly? Charlie's in Dudley. Charlie, question or answer?
Hello, it's an answer.
Thank you, Charlie.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you very much.
So our brain is incapable of creating faces. Every face you see in your dream is a face that you've seen before. So it may have just passed you in a crowd, but it's definitely a face you've seen before.
Qualifications?
We talked about it when I was in college in psychology. Really? And the teacher talks about how your brain is just incapable of creating a face out of nothing. It's a face you've definitely seen.
Good grief. And I mean that counts as a qualification. It's not, you know...
It's not very exciting, I know.
No, well, I mean, it's not like you didn't... What level did you take psychology at? A-level?
A-level, yeah, but I wasn't very good at it, I'm not going to lie.
But you've definitely remembered correctly.
Definitely, yeah, because I remember thinking, that's amazing. And now if I see somebody in a dream and I don't know them, I think, oh, my God, I wonder where or when I saw their face.
You know, listening to you and Neil, I thought I had quite exciting dreams, but you've got time in a dream to stop and think, this is a dream and I don't recognise...
My dreams are like an episode of EastEnders. I wake up and remember them.
Really? Do you eat a lot of cheese? Yeah. Do you eat a lot of cheese? Do you eat a lot of cheese?
I do eat a lot of cheese. Probably too much cheese.
Well, because they say that cheese has an influence on your dreams. You know, no, they really do. I'm not making this up. It's supposed to give you much more vivid.
No, I've heard it before. I believe you.
That could be it. Right, so you a round of applause, Charlie, and I hope Neil's happy with the answer.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Take care.
Thank you, bye.
Bye-bye. 12:44 is the time. Ian's in Gatwick. Ian, question or answer?
It's an answer, James. Many happy returns, by
many,
the way.
Many thanks. Go on. Which one?
It's the answer to the Prime Minister losing their seat.
Go on.
So if, in the event that the Prime Minister would lose their seat, they would retain Prime Ministerial position because it is the Queen that bestows the title of Prime Minister and also the one that takes it away.
Okay.
However, convention would mean that as leader of the Conservative Party, they would no longer be leader of the Conservative Party. Leadership elections would take place and that new leader would therefore then go to the palace and be invited to become Prime Minister. But at the immediate time of the election, they would remain as Prime Minister.
Gosh. I mean, it wouldn't be sustainable, but they wouldn't lose the gig at the moment.
Constitutionally, that's what would happen.
Yeah.
In practice, they would probably resign and an interim would be. But constitutionally, they would
I bet Johnson wouldn't. He'd cling on for dear life, wouldn't he, if it happened to him?
You know it.
You do. Qualifications?
Study politics and a fan all my life.
I like it a lot. There we go. Round of applause for Ian. That's a good answer. I mean, it is a great question as well, actually, because it's a theoretical but a possible. 12:45 is the time.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:49 is the time. Quite a few of you, just to steer back to topics that I'm sure Sheila Folk, well, she will be returning you to in 10 minutes or so. It is incredible, isn't it? Because sometimes I'm a bit so close to the action, I miss stuff. You know, you've got your face pressed up to the screen, you can't make out what it... They tried it with Owen Paterson. Remember when Owen Paterson broke all the rules? What did they do? Exactly. They wanted to tear up the rule book. And they got away with it, actually, until the public opinion on that occasion, fermented by the soon-to-be-dismissed editor of the Daily Mail, just said, this just isn't on. This is absolutely outrageous. And Boris Johnson looks like he's broken the rules. What did Jacob Rees-Mogg, who was in charge of the plan to exonerate Owen Paterson by tearing up the rule book after he broke the rules, what did Jacob Rees-Mogg do in the House of Commons today? Exactly. Well, you may have missed it, so I should tell you. He tried to blame Boris Johnson breaking the rules on the rules. Setting you up for another big con. Don't let them do it this time, hey, lads? 10:01 is the time. Graham's in Liverpool. Is it that, Graham?
Yes, it is that, Graham.
I love it when a plan comes together. So I know what question you're going to answer. You're going to answer the question about travelling around the world in 80 days and whether or not it is possible or how long it would take to do so. I hope you got the parameters of the question by scheduled journeys without flying.
Yeah. So by my estimation, obviously this is something that I've thought about quite a lot. I think you could do it in about 31 days. You could do it in a month. It'd be difficult. Everything would have to line up perfectly. And you wouldn't be able to do the same route as Phileas Fogg does in the book because he goes through Egypt and India and stuff like that. I would go via Moscow to the Vladivostok Express all the way to Vladivostok, Trans-Siberian Express, sorry.
Yes.
Then go over to Japan, get to Tokyo, get a boat from, get a cargo ship, scheduled cargo ship from Tokyo across the Pacific, which will take about 11 days, get to San Francisco, take the Greyhound bus across to New York, which will take 2 days or 47 hours, and then a cargo ship across the Atlantic, which I've done before, takes a week, get to Liverpool, 2 hours on the train from Liverpool to London, done.
That's amazing. Do you know why?
Why?
That's exactly how I would do it.
Yeah, well, it's the most sensible way.
Well, I know what your qualifications are, but not everybody will.
I am the first and so far only person to visit every single country in the world on scheduled ground transport.
Also, well worth a follow on Twitter as well. Graham, nice work. Have a round of applause. And I think, it's not the same, is it? Is it visiting every country in the world? It's not the same. So I don't think I can give you a ray on that one.
I do have the Guinness World Record for visiting the most countries in 1 year without flying.
I know, but it's got nothing to do with...
133.
Wow. That's really... But it's got nothing to do with going around the world, has it? Because you could... There aren't that many countries involved in your journey going around the world. It's not... I'm just seeing whether or not you're going to get a Ray Liotta, but I don't think you are.
Specifically scheduled ground transport. I do have the Guinness World Record for that, so...
No. But also, you don't have to visit every country to go around the world, do you? In many ways, the fewer countries you visit, the quicker you'll probably make it, sort of.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, you got your round of applause. It gives you something to aim for. You've got to have ambitions in life. Graham, thank you very much. Lovely stuff. 12:52 is the time. I might finish a bit early today, just because I've got a few thank yous to do. So on the questions and answers, I need a minute at the end to... sort of remember my manners. 12:52. Gary is in Darlington. Gary, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
And it's an answer to the snoring while you're on manoeuvres in the army.
Brilliant. Yeah, go on.
Yes, that is that is acceptable as long as the person or the lad who's on the phone is medically fit. Otherwise, and then whilst you're on manoeuvres, if you are that close to the enemy that they can hear you snore, then you should be awake anyway, is the general rule. However, you know, operations are quite tight and people do end up snoring. That's not going to preclude him. There's always going to be someone awake, especially, let's say, frontline infantry being on patrol and you're in the wood and the enemy's a matter of metres away. Someone nods off, which they invariably will do because the operational, you know, environment's very, very busy and tight. Then, they'll get a nudge and then that's it. And I can sort of sympathise with you as well, in having lived in barrack rooms. Not too dissimilar to boarding houses where you were...
Getting the boot on the head.
That boot on the head, yeah. Wake up because you had a few beers the night before and snoring and you've got the boots around your bed space. Yeah, had all that before. But no, it wouldn't preclude him.
I've got another caller on. I just want to bring on another person because it's not a contradiction. Okay. You're both going to get a round of applause, but I just think it's fascinating because there might be exceptions to what you've told us. From Gary to Gareth. Yeah. Gareth is in Cardiff. Gareth, what do you want to say?
Hello, James. Yeah. He's dead, right? Snoring is not a problem in the military unless he wants to become a sniper. If you want to become a sniper, it's a specialist qualification, really. They tend to work on their own. They're highly skilled in camouflage because they work behind enemy lines. They not allowed smoke.
And there's no one there to give him a nudge, is there? That's the point. There's no one there to say, wake up, mate.
Exactly.
Are you cool with that, Gary?
I'm cool with it to an extent. What I will say is, though, that snipers always work in, or most of the times, infantry snipers, which is sort of my area, my background sort of expertise, don't know about working behind enemy lines, but they usually work in pairs. But anyway, I do accept Gareth's sort of exception there.
Gary in Darlington, qualifications?
I used to be an instructor at the infantry battle school.
That'll do.
The only one in the British Army.
Gareth in Cardiff. Qualifications?
I'm a podiatrist.
Right.
I'm a podiatrist. But I used to work at the infantry battle school. Last posting, 1989.
Do you know each other?
There you go, Gareth. And there's not many people been through there, Gareth. And
Well, you've just robbed each other of a Ray Liotta. Do you know each other?
No, what we do now.
When were you there, Gareth? Sorry, very quickly.
I was there 88 to 89. It was called the School of Infantry then.
Before my time, it was still a School of Infantry when I was there. I was there 2004, 2005. But anyway,
I love that. That's fantastic, lads. Thank you for that.
You know what, James? James, I had a feeling that I might know him or know of him.
That's incredible, isn't it? Two rounds of applause, please, Keith. Great work. And thank you for your service as well, gentlemen, obviously. It is 12:55, and Mark's in Barrow in Furness. No, he's not. We're staying here. Are we staying up? Yes, he is. Mark, question or answer?
It's an answer about bachelor.
Of course it is. Carry on.
Of course. Medieval Latin word, baccalaureatus, a bit of an obscure word. No one seems to know its etymology, and it's why some degrees in some systems are called baccalaureate.
Yes.
And it's then started to be used for students early in their progress, and it came to then be transferred so it can be anyone early in a series of procedures. So that's why it means unmarried man, because the idea was that anyone who wasn't a priest would eventually get married.
Right.
So bachelor will be an early stage.
Is there a laurel? Laureate laurel? Could it have something to do with laurels? Would you have got a wreath?
Well, it's been claimed it does, but some people have said that's a folk etymology.
Okay. I know what your qualifications are, I'm keen to collaborate on some sort of project in the future, because you are such an interesting man. But I'm cracking on, so here's another round of applause for Mark, the linguist. David is in Torquay. David, question or answer?
I have an answer, James.
Carry on. You've got a minute. I need a minute to say my thank yous on my birthday presents. Carry on.
with alarming alacrity, then, the armrest question, etiquette, there is none.
Ah. Qualifications?
And, airline pilot.
So, I mean, what happens if there's a massive row?
Well, it happens quite a lot with our cabin colleagues, and they've got to deal with that, and sometimes it requires a little bit of higher-up intervention, but normally the adults, like five-year-olds, get back to adults again.
Yes.
It's what happens in the posher seat, so it's a little bit more alarming, but we won't go into that, children, listen.
You mean shenanigans.
Indeed. But the real reason for the armrest being there, if I may briefly...
Yes.
Initially, air transport started with nothing more than wicker chairs that were just held on vintage aircraft cabins. Of the day, as accidents started to happen, we realised, or air accident boards realised, that there was more that could be done to actually protect passengers in the event of high G impacts. So the airline seats of today are all rated to a certain G-force impact, and the real purpose of the armrest only really comes to the fore when you go through the safety briefing or video as your aircraft departs the gate, which will introduce the brace position.
I'm going to have to stop you. You said you were going to be quick. Have a round of applause. Honestly. Thank you. I hope your in-flight announcements aren't as long-winded as that, David. And I say that with the greatest of love and affection. But I just want to say a few thank yous. And I'm not going to be able to squeeze them all in. But and it's astonishing how kind you've been. But Darren Christian in particular for the chocolates, and Ali for the lovely Harris Tweed bookmark that is absolutely gorgeous. And slightly unfortunately, I couldn't read the name of the person who sent me Fintan O'Toole's new book about being Irish. I cannot wait to read it. It's such a thoughtful and gorgeous question, and such a kind card as well. It might be Donaghy, the Irish name. That's it, isn't it? It might be Donaghy. If I've read that correctly, thank you to Donaghy. Sheila Fogarty is here. It's also her birthday. Thank you. Thank you to Jean.
Where's my pile of cards?
Thank you. It's a big one for me, isn't it? Thank you to Emma for the books as well. That was such a gorgeous, thoughtful question. Thank you to Preshi. And thank you also for telling me what the abbreviation of your Christian name is, because I would have made a bit of a mouthful of trying to read that out properly. Thank you to Joyce and everybody else. It's lovely. I often get messages from people saying how valuable the programme is to you. You've got no idea how valuable it is to me as well, and it's days like today that's really brought home. So thank you to everybody, and happy birthday to Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you, and happy birthday to you. That book, We Don't Know Ourselves, is by Fintan O'Toole. I bought it for my brother for his birthday, and he loves it.
And finally, the winner of the Mystery Hour board game this week is, I think it's going to be Stu for asking the question about armrests on planes.